basta con le cognome.
Is it?
Close to your head.
Your ears are better than mine.
All right, here we go. Let's put on a show. What do you say?
Let's do it.
Terry Dozier, Mark Cordes, and Scott Landsberg. The Human Calculator is in the house.
Great to be here.
All right, man. Well, we're excited that you're here. Now, you know the rules here. You just jump in whenever you can. Never jump over the host.
But of course.
You know, after him.
Jump on him. Sorry, that's...
You can.
Right.
Yeah. Terry is doing some...
sketching.
Doing some nude sketching over here. Right?
We needed
strange.
Two pieces of paper for
Grant. Yeah, why is that?
Because your arms are really long.
Oh, the arms.
That's right.
Okay, got it. Okay, I don't know what's going on over there, but thank everybody for tuning in to our podcast here. Now, I forgot to ask, what is the iTunes deal?
So close.
So close, but we're not quite there yet, huh?
No.
Okay, so you just got to keep all the buffoons out there who are our fans. Who can't figure out how to download it. just keep trying, okay? But hopefully by next week, you'll be on iTunes. Just flip on there, type in Grant Wood Show, and you can download it very easily, just like all of your other great music that you... I just downloaded. I did a free download, and that's why I was a little late. Drake. You guys know Drake?
He's a singer?
It's a singer named Drake.
Wow.
Hip-hop artist. And it was supposed to be, according to the review I read, it was in the... It's kind of like Kanye West and Kanye...
Free.
But free.
So probably not as good.
Well, no, he's... I don't know why it was free. But no, it was like a huge article in the LA Times, so that's why I'm late downloading that. And I listened to it on the way, and I'm going to stick with Kanye.
Not worth the price, then?
It was worth it, except now I don't know how to get it off of there. Now it might grow on me, but, you know.
Drake.
I've been listening to that Kanye West thing.
Music shouldn't have to grow on you, don't you think? I mean, shouldn't you just like it?
Yeah, you should. You're right. I don't think it's going to grow me, but Drake is probably not going to make my list.
I saw him in concert, Drake.
You
He's
did?
Actually at the discount bin at Best Buy.
No.
Yeah, the little thing. That's where he did his show from.
Come on now. Drake, he has potential. I will report back because I actually heard a couple songs. Then I said, eh.
Okay. No, you should like somebody. You know what?
Kanye.
It's funny that you said that because we had a 40th birthday party we went to on Saturday night. Fitting with the theme of what'd you do this weekend. I know
yes,
that was your next
you
question. We went to a birthday party on Saturday night, and it was way up in Carefree, and we got there late, and the host said, hey, we have a friend of our family's going to sing some songs for you. And we thought, God.
That's usually bad.
Then she sits up there, and I thought, how old is she?
Right.
She looks 16. She's 14.
Oh, okay. That's even
We're
worse.
Like, oh, great. Mm-hmm. I'm sure the talent show was full, so she's going to... Most unbelievably talented girl I've ever heard. Her name is Zella Day, and I will bring her music in.
Zella Day.
Zella Day. She's 14 years old. She writes her own stuff. She plays guitar and she sings. And mark my words, she will be it.
She writes her own stuff. That's always interesting.
How do you write something when you're 14?
Well, you base it on your life experience. You know?
Yeah.
Someone put gum on your chair and...
Unbelievable.
You know, that sort of
the most talented little girl I've ever heard.
Well, Taylor Swift writes her own songs, and she's pretty much number one in country music right now. What is she like? I don't know.
She's 18, like 17 or something.
Something like that.
She's been at First Fridays for those of you who've been down there. She's been at a couple studios down there. And
who, Zella?
Is this Zella Day
so
girl?
You have friends who name their kids Zella?
I don't. Hippies.
Stage name. Her name is Doris, and she had to change it for Doris Day. Taken.
Terrible.
No, it was already taken.
It was
so
taken,
weak.
That's right.
Give you time to think of something funnier. Yeah. What'd you do this weekend?
I'm exhausted.
What did you do this weekend?
I'm exhausted.
Did anybody partake in?
Yes.
So we're taping a little late here. Did in the week because I was over in L.A. Did anybody partake in St. Patrick's Day activities last night? That's a big, big drinking day. Anybody do that?
I don't go there. No, that's like the perfect day to stay home because
that's what I thought.
Statistically speaking, DUIs.
Oh, there you go.
Statistically,
all those
here we
things.
Go.
It's like get a driver.
Numbers are bad.
Invite your friends over. We had a bunch of people over last night to watch all the shows.
What shows? American Idol?
All the shows. We just sort of cruised, you TV on and then you see everybody.
All those shows.
It was
fun. That? Come
it was
on over and see what's on.
It was somebody you guys all know,
on a
Danny.
Wednesday night.
Is there a statistically good day to go out and not get killed?
No, as long as if it ends in a Y,
it's out.
Yeah. Hey, yeah. Really, I've never done that, though. invite a bunch of friends over to see what's on my TiVo.
What's good on my TiVo? Oh, not that. Oh, God.
Oh, yeah. Whoops. Oh,
don't you guys oh, think just because the economy is going the way it is, I think that people are spending more time together now. It's cheaper.
Doing free things.
Not it's doing
cheaper.
That.
You're figuring out ways to spend time, watch, entertainment.
Watching porn at Scott Sklandberg.
Yeah, Danny.
How cheap is he?
He was great. It was awesome.
That's not
dinner.
Great.
It was
okay, the dinner
awesome. World class meal.
Scanning his TiVo is not, that's not good.
With God, Danny in charge of the remote control, no less.
Danny's
oh, so you
TiVo.
Didn't even watch one show, you had to watch a bunch?
It was fun. It was fascinating.
If I look a little bleary-eyed, it's because I was over at our place in Santa Monica, and we have, you get the basic cable or whatever that comes with the place, and Channel 99 is the Playboy channel, and you can kind of almost make it out, you know, but we don't really have it. but
he's got paper clips under the box, standing with one arm up.
When you flip it from 98 to 99, it's clear for a split second, so you go to 98, 99, 98, 99.
Can somebody come fix the knob on my television? It's broken.
And women want to know why premature ejaculation is a problem.
It's a necessity.
It's because you think, look at that, that's a boob. And then you go, no, that was James Carville's head.
I know, I was on that CNN, who would have thought?
Yeah.
I know, that's not good. No, that's, you know, here, I have set a personal record, though, speaking of this last week, because I was out of town on my own, and this is how exciting it is. You know, I'm supposed to be writing, which I actually was. I just had today, for the fifth day in a row, of Beanboro.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I can't believe we're all sitting in the same room.
That's wow. Gross.
And that's a show. Let's go.
Thanks.
That's a little warning. Wow. Yeah, Woody. Woo.
Wow.
Yeah, 5 days in a row. I mean, that's
really?
So gross. Like, you're in L.A., home of, you know, great cuisine. Go out, do something, you know.
Beanboro.
No, there's a place called Holy Guacamole down there. Every night. Now, last night I was going to go out. There's also a place there called Fish Enterprise Company or something. And they have 2 pounds of lobster on Mondays or Tuesdays mm-hmm. for $24. I've done that before. So I had my little writing tablet. I need to sketch out the scene. And I had a play that I bought at this store called Samuel French, which is the greatest place of all time. It's one in New York and one in L.A. They have plays and movie scripts and all sorts of stuff. And I went in there, and guess what? Packed with St. Patrick's Day idiots. Packed. Couldn't get in.
Shocking.
So, holy guacamole. I got a little guacamole for St. Patrick's Day, and that was it. So I have nothing exciting to report.
Wow.
That's not good.
No, it's not good. That's all right, though.
I had a gig last night for the National Hemophilia Association down in at Tempe Mission
Is
Falls.
Is there a punchline for this?
Kidding.
Please tell me it's not.
What's that?
You're not going to make fun of hemophilia.
No, no. Okay. That was just that's really what I did.
Is that a bruising experience?
Yes. I said, can you get the economy to stop its bleeding? That was my big hemophilia joke.
Oh, did you say
no,
that?
No, I didn't say that.
No, they wouldn't like that.
And the crowd's like this.
Yeah. Was this a real group?
Yeah, they're fundraisers. None of them were hemophiliacs. These are just people that raise money for that. So.
Is that still a big problem? Because it doesn't get a lot of attention.
You know what? I asked this question. 1 out of 10,000 people are born with hemophilia.
And what does that mean when you have hemophilia? Does it mean you can't stop bleeding?
Correct. You get a little, like for example, they would never eat Beanboro for 5 days in a row.
for a rectal.
Internal.
Bleeding,
right.
Bleeding
God,
from
oh
the rectum.
Oh, my God. Moving on. That's a show.
Yeah, that's a show. Wow, it's hot in here.
It's really. Is this on purpose? Are you supposed to get really warm in here and take off your clothes?
No.
Because that's out.
No, get your sketch pad out. No, it's not. Okay, we got to talk. We're going to talk about lots of stuff here. Since we're on the medical side. What is the deal here with Liam Neeson's wife, this Natasha Richardson here? Because now they're saying she's practically dead, if not dead.
Accidents are serious.
Yeah, but she fell on the bunny slope and barely fell, apparently. Just like fell over and got up. She was okay. There was an instructor with her. She didn't hit anything. She didn't hit a tree or a rock. She fell in the snow on the bunny slope. And, you know, now, hours later, she's basically dead. I mean, what the hell?
I don't know.
So what is that all about?
You should never ski on the Sonny Bono slope.
Was that where she was?
She'd wear a helmet.
No, but he ran into a tree.
I know.
You know, I mean, I understand that when guys run into trees.
No, that's just, they said, an hour later, she said she had a severe headache, and she's bleeding from the brain stem. That's what I heard.
That's not a good spot.
That is so unbelievable.
45. You know what? And God is tragic, but That's not a good sport to take up at 45.
Agreed. No. That and golf. If you haven't done it by the time you're 45,
it's probably not for you.
Yeah.
Backgammon is
Yeah, but she looked like she was in good shape and everything. Yeah. I can't imagine. You know, I didn't know she was Vanessa Redgrave's daughter also, so she comes from a big acting family. And wow, just unbelievable.
Our prayers have to go out to the family, obviously, because it's got to be mind-boggling to deal with that.
I can't. Can you imagine getting a call and your wife's on the bunny slope now? I mean, it's not possible.
No.
So, I don't know.
Well, I heard that they said it's just more of the Redgrave curse.
Did they have
But
a curse?
I didn't hear anything more about that. Does anybody know what the Redgrave curse is?
I don't know what the Redgrave curse is.
Evidently, there is one.
Really? I know that I watched this Vanessa Redgrave in this thing, My House in Umbria, once because... a few years ago because we had rented a house in Umbria. Yes. So I thought, hey, perfect movie to
it's
watch.
My house.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to a house in Umbria, and there was a movie called that, and I watched it, and it was her as like a sullen, drunk, old bag who was putting the moves on younger guys who were staying, like renting rooms for her house.
Did she get lucky?
No. God, no. They were repulsed as I was. It was gross. And that was it. And every now and then you'd go, oh, hey, that's Umbria. And for 5 seconds.
It was mostly the house then, inside. It was less of Umbria, more of the house.
Oh, it was so bad. Anyway, no, I know she's done great things, but not house in Umbria. All right, well, we're going to honor a very famous Republican politician with our friend Mr. Woodpecker here in a little bit. But to start out with, all anyone's been talking about for the last week is the bonuses that were paid to the AIG executives, and primarily they're going to the people who were in the division of the company that screwed this whole thing up, which is really unbelievable. And you know what, it's fairly obvious that, you know, with everybody's frustrations at seeing their 401ks, you know, be cut in half, and unemployment and job cuts, and you know, it's just been a disaster for quite a while now, for 6 months or so. This is something, and when you talk about derivatives and how all these things worked and how these were packaged together, it's very difficult for anyone to really get a grasp on. When you hear that someone who was responsible for screwing this whole thing up, which helped lead to the whole debacle, is getting a $1 million or a $5 million bonus, that people can relate to. And they're going absolutely wild. I mean, this is the biggest grassroots outcry that we've seen in a long, long time here.
It's a huge miscalculation, the whole thing.
Could you have stopped it?
Well, not me personally, but I think a different approach mathematically would revolutionize the outcome of our economic industry. It's really mind-boggling to think of how out of hand it's gotten. And when you start using numbers like trillions, I mean, I'm a human calculator, and when
Scott
you say a trillion, my mind
calculator.
Explodes. And on news now, they throw around a trillion like it's no big deal. So what it's done is desensitized us to the word billions. All of a sudden,
it's only
billions.
Billion.
Yeah, exactly. And so all of a sudden, a few billion. And if you had to graphically lay out a billion and just sort of get a grasp of what that is, and
how
all of a sudden you realize that's a thousand of those is a trillion.
Right.
It really takes your breath away to see that they're just throwing the numbers around the way they are, and not only for AIG, but everything that's happened.
Well, now today they announced another trillion is going to go out here, which is probably necessary. I mean, it's pretty amazing to me how this thing has, how they got themselves so interrelated, and since they were unregulated. Mm-hmm. That they just, you know, they put everybody at risk, and the thing that is so infuriating about it is they look at the industries that primarily are at fault here. We've got mainly big banks, and then we've got now with AIG, an insurance company. So what do they deal with primarily in their business? They deal with risk. That's what it's all about. When they decide on loans, when they decide on whether to insure you or not, they're in the risk business. And yet they went out there and decided that they are going to take the most ridiculous risk imaginable. You know, if they have had to ultimately pay, it's exponential, mm-hmm. so that it was impossible, really. So these people who wouldn't insure you because, oh, you went to the hospital 5 years ago for something, or wouldn't give you a loan because, oh, well, you know, you were late on a payment for your credit card 6 months ago, were willing to do whatever it took. Mm-hmm. Did any of you guys see the 60 Minutes?
This week?
No. I'm sorry. It was a CNN thing, House of Cards that they did.
Huh.
Or maybe that was CNBC, which we'll get to also. But this thing called House of Cards. Well, they interviewed all these people who were doing these subprime loans. And basically, well, the first they hired, one guy said, this is a guy in Southern California, he said, we were hiring guys who literally were pizza guys. They quit their job at the pizza company. We hired lots of used car dealers because they're great at sales. And these guys, the pizza guy, he's a guy who worked for me, he was making $20,000 a month. And the deal was, it was all, you didn't have non-verified income.
Right.
And really nothing was verified. And nobody wanted it to be verified, because if you verified it, you're out. And then they went up the ladder. Well, why did this keep going? Well, it kept going because, and we're talking about the big boys, whether it's Lehman Brothers or AIG or whoever we're talking about, even if they didn't want to get involved, at some point they said, we got to get involved, because otherwise we're going to go out of business. Mm-hmm. Everybody's making so much money here, we're going to be left behind. Okay, well, why didn't you do a few things that you normally do? For example, verify income. How about that? Well, if we did that, our loans would go to zero. Mm-hmm. Zero. So we can't do that. Well, of course, they could have done that. They could have been responsible about it, but it's called greed, and they're pocketing all this money. Now, on AIG, though, you know, where does the blame lie here besides AIG? I mean, that's kind of what people are talking about now.
It sounds like it's all the same group of people. I mean, it seems like the same names keep coming up from both sides, and it just perpetuates the problem. It really seems like we need a major interrupt, and I really thought when Obama jumped in office that all these patterns that we've had were going to be interrupted, and mm-hmm. we're going to have a fresh start, and it seems just like not a good beginning anyway to have an interrupt in that pattern. So I'm curious to see how we're going to break out of this, because it's one thing to recover, but for right now we got to stop it. And
right, you got to stop the bleeding.
And AIG is a major player in that now.
Sorry.
Hey, you know what? You know what's really interesting? You know, at one point, not too distant future, AIG was a good.
We were wishing them well. Is Geithner. From on executive salaries, but they missed the bonus thing.
Exactly. A bunch of crap that you're mad about, and so you really lay down the law, and the next, here's third.
Huge deal. And it kind of, then I thought maybe I missed it, because maybe it was just we're conditioned that there's been so much bad news that no one would be outraged, because for about 48 hours, not much happened, and then boom, it's just gone crazy now. For good reason. I mean, it's pretty friggin' outrageous. So what I think is, I'm sure they'll be back. I mean, they should have made this a condition for any of this money. And now, you know, what do you do? I don't know. You got to take it out of somebody's hide, though. This idea, by the way, one bad idea, I think, is they're talking about taxing.
95% tax.
Do a special tax on these
guys. Crap. No, huh?
Well, I think that's not going to hold up either. We don't have special taxes in this country.
Even Charlie Rangel, who doesn't pay taxes, said that was a bad idea.
It's a bad idea. Well, I think that's unconstitutional.
How long before a company like that can afford to pay back a $30 billion loan? Oh. I mean, in this environment now, mm-hmm. how do you even get back to breaking even, no less, paying back $30 billion?
Well, hopefully, I mean, the idea is, again, AIG is too big, too interrelated across the board, especially when you throw in their insurance business as well, that we couldn't let them fall. And, you know, that's something that we got to look at when we do get out of this mess, is how do we structure this economy so we're not in that position in the future? I think that's something we're going to have to do. But, you know, but what do you think? It looks like, I mean, the stock market has gone up 6 out of 7 days.
Yeah.
Is this just a bounce before another fall, or?
Well, it was down today until they said that they're going to buy off some of the bad debt.
Right.
And so it rallied a little bit, but I think it just got so low that everybody realized it's a great time to buy.
Jump in. Mm-hmm.
Is this an okay time for me? I have some ideas on how we can fix this whole thing.
We need you.
Thing,
we need it from a
you're
mathematical
hired.
Perspective.
Go.
Somebody call DC. It was just us for having fun.
Now, how do you describe yourself? Your math skills are
freakish.
Like we'll let you describe you, and then we'll describe you. Okay?
Are you a savant?
I don't know if I want to hear it.
I'm an idiot, and he's a savant.
Yeah, Mark and I go hand in hand. No,
are you a savant?
I don't like using words like that because...
But some have called you that.
A lot of different phrases. Autistic, savant,
like a Rain
Man. Prodigy, Rain Man.
You had like a head injury at some point.
Multiple head injuries.
Well, really?
Besides the self-induced one.
Yeah.
But when you were little, didn't you kind of get a little knock and all of a sudden you just...
Right here, my Harry Potter scar. I was 9 years old and my brother and I were sledding down a hill in upstate New York and it was
went into the pond, broke through the ice, saved you and his ear was messed up.
No, that's a different story.
Clarence came
this was a barbed wire fence.
Barry.
We came over a hill and there was a barbed wire fence there and my brother jumped off at the last second to get off and it pushed me into it even harder. It just ripped me all up and I started doing math like that. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
But no, about the same time, funny enough, because it was in fourth grade when I was learning how to carry numbers when you have to add a column of numbers. And for some reason, she picked me to go up to the board because I was screwing around and wanted to make an example of me. I walked up to the board and I did it backwards. And I just said, well, that's 84. And she's like, how did you do that? I don't see where you carried. And I said, I don't know what you're talking about, but, you know, let's try
that's
another 84. One. And so the fourth grade is when it started. Everything I would learn in math, I'd figure out an easier way to get it. But I have a natural gift for numbers, and that's what I'm listed in the Guinness Book World Records as the fastest human calculator for actually counting by a number faster than a computer.
Give us an example of that. How could we?
Yeah, the world record is 15 seconds they gave me. It was on TV primetime here in America, and then I broke my own record in London a couple of years later. And they had the fastest 10-key accountant they could find race me. And so the Guinness judge chose a random number, and he said 38. So I had to add 38 plus 38 plus 38 plus 38 as fast as I could out loud for 15 seconds while the accountant did 38 plus 38 plus 38 plus 38 on his calculator as fast as he could. Right, he's flying.
Yeah.
And I'd never done it before, and I heard the keys over there just flying. I was like, man, he's probably just kicking my butt, you know? And the 15 seconds went off, and I said my answer, and he said his, and I beat him by 7. So in 15 seconds, he got 28 answers, and I had 35. And I went to London and broke my record a couple of years later. Now my world record is 36 answers in 15 seconds. So when I get in full speed, I'm averaging 2.5 answers per second, which is about 7 or 8 digits.
What if we just give
you
a number? Can you just do a few?
Yeah, if you pick a number, I'm just going to start adding it to itself over. Here, Carrie, you got it. I'll do the... we got a little calculator, so you just make sure I'm not making this stuff up, all right?
By the way,
a little slow.
Here's a great story to preface this.
Where's the on button?
You got the slowest 10-key operator.
Yeah, that's you found her.
A great story. Scott realized he had this talent when he was a little kid, and his mom would shop, and she would take him with him, and he would add up all the items she'd put in the cart.
Yeah, that
and
was
get
fun.
To the
and
register.
They'd be like, they're jacking you around.
No, my dad would have me say, okay, add it up, and... I would do it all, and then I'd get to the cash register, and he would write out the check before we even got total.
Wow.
With the tax.
Everything.
With the tax.
And so I did that on Oprah. Oprah had me go to her favorite grocery store, and she had me race a scanning cash register. They filled up a basket totally full and had me race the scanning cash register, and I actually beat her as well. So that was I'd never done that before, but it was really fun. So that's my world record is counting by a number. So clearly,
we're going to get to your economic.
No worries. Thank you. I appreciate
this. But right now, we want to hear. Okay, I'm going to give you a number. Let's say.
So give me a 2-digit number.
Okay, 49.
So punch in 49 plus 49 equals, and I'm going to just keep adding 49, and she's going to hit equals each time I say the next answer. So you got 98, 147, 196, 245, 294, 343, 392, 441, 490. 539, 588, 637, 686, 735, 784, 833, 882, 931, 980, 1029, 1078, 1127, 176, 1225, 1274, 1323, 1372. Like that. I get going pretty quick.
I really hurried up at the end, but he had me by 4 numbers at 1, 3,
but
4,
he was
2.
Right.
You know, he's right every time.
He's a good driver, too.
Freakish.
And so that's my world record. And I'm actually leaving for Japan in 2 days where I'm going to be racing a computer, and they're going to have me set a new world record doing a 3-digit number 15 seconds, three-digit number.
You can do three-digit numbers?
Sure, but nobody's beaten my two-digit record yet, so I didn't,
Do people try to do that?
Yeah, I've been to events all over the world.
Japanese guys?
Everywhere, all over the world. I went to Germany 2 years ago for the World Mental Math Championships and met the top 18 human calculators from all over the world. We spent 4 days together racing in all different events, and it was
Heidi Klum the MC for that?
No, I wish.
Okay, that'd be good.
The geeks just don't get the, the supermodel.
Stephen Hawking.
Yeah. That's what I do.
Also, how about the birthday thing? Because that's a weird deal. I always love that one here.
Cool.
If I give you my birthday, you can, in your mind,
Calculate what day of the week that a date fell on. That's right.
And this, you can do it fast.
Yeah, I'm also called the human calendar. So when I visit schools and talk to kids, all the kids at the end of the show will write down their name and their birth date. And so when they get in line to meet me afterwards, I'll look at it and I'll say, oh, hey, Timmy, you were born on a Tuesday. Write down Tuesday and then autograph it. And so I get to meet and connect with every kid in the classroom.
Awesome.
And it really, then they go home and check it on their Google or wherever and see if that day of the week was right or not. So just give kids a chance to have fun with math. So just for fun, you guys, everybody think of a date that's special to you. It can be a birthday, a wedding, a kid's birthday, whatever you want. Just tell me the month.
We have to remember what day of the week.
Yeah, so pick one you know, but tell me the month, day, and the year, and I'll calculate what day of the week that it was on.
Okay. May 19th, 1954.
That was on a Wednesday.
That was quick.
October 13th, 1995.
Oh, that's a Friday the 13th.
Very cool.
The 13th. And now, let's see, that happened again in 2000, and 2006, it was also a Friday the 13th. So
yep.
next one coming up is in 2017. So you
I'll
get that
put it on
for
my calendar.
Yeah, so you got that to look forward to. And so I do programs all over the world, and I just try to inspire students and parents and teachers and teach them how to make math fun. And I feel like I've discovered a way to introduce numbers and arithmetic to people that turns on a button in our brain that is the power button to the human calculator that's within all of us.
And you think people can do this?
I believe I have discovered a way to teach everybody how to turn on the calculator in their brain, not to get up to do world record stuff maybe, but to feel more comfortable in everyday math, to not be afraid to do basic arithmetic in everyday life, not to be afraid to get a check at dinner at the restaurant with your friends and, you know, run away from figuring out tax and tip and all those things. So just where you don't feel socially awkward with numbers around.
If you see at a bookstore or something checking out, especially when old people are frequenting the bookstore, and they have right there a little laminated card that says, buy this card for a couple bucks so you can figure out what 15% is.
That's right.
Does that, like, really annoy you?
Well, it blows my mind, but, you know, it's just another sign.
More than that anyway. Go for 20. That's lame.
It's another sign. It's another crutch in our society that allows people to become lazy in the aspect of numbers. And if you think about it, we all speak a few languages. We all choose our primary language, which is English, but we speak another language. It's numbers. And just like English is all A through Z, today we've been speaking and we all use A through Z and just throw it around in the right combination and it works out. Well, when I'm in a calculator mode, I'm speaking the language of numbers and the alphabet is 0 through 9. Nothing else I say. I just use 0 through 9 to answer any question on the planet. And so that number mode, that speaking in that calculator mode is not normal for people. We've been taught to memorize our basic math facts. And so I'm on a mission to change that to where I've discovered a way to introduce numbers to people that makes logical sense to your brain instead of just memorizing a bunch of basic math facts. So 4 and 4 is 8, but you don't just memorize, you actually understand why it is what it is. So it comes out in a little later this year. And I think it's just going to, I'd love to share it with you guys, only because you have pencil and paper. Just to show you the secret of the universe, would that be okay?
Yes.
I'd love that.
Okay, so this is what I teach kids, and Mark has seen this many times. I'm very blessed to have him as a friend for several years, and he's been to schools with me all over the country and sees that I have an impact on kids. But what I do is I do a whole demonstration racing kids with the calculator, and all these kids will, you know, throw whatever they want at me, and I beat them, and I'll say, okay, put the calculator away. Now, when you look at a calculator, look at the digits that are on there. How many buttons on that calculator have digits?
9. Well, 10 with a 0.
Right, but there's no 10 button, is there?
No.
It's really 0 through 9.
You're really smart now.
So we have 10 fingers, and there's 10 digits on a calculator, and it looks like this. We have 10 digits, and it goes like this. 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. So you guys try it. If you want to turn on the calculator in your brain, take your hands and shake that 1 through 10 Roman numeral thing out.
They're out.
Now close your fists and now start at 0 and count your 10 fingers, so 0 through 9.
We're putting up a finger for, instead of 1, the first finger is 0.
Just like a calculator starts at 0. Ready?
Okay.
0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
So the other hand is 5 through 9.
Right. And you guys just turned on the calculator in your brain because you started at 0, and it shows you that what is the highest digit?
9,
right? The secret is everything goes back to 9. So, Carrie, just for fun, write down the next number after 9. It's a 10, right? Mm-hmm. So write down 10.
Okay.
And as you can see, Carrie wrote down two digits, a 1 and a 0. It's not a one-digit number. It's a 10. Two digits. So take the two digits and add them together. So what's 1 plus 0?
1.
Put that total underneath 10. And now subtract. So what's 10? Take away 1. 9. Every number in the universe goes back to 9. So let's try that with the number 11. So write down the number 11, add up the digits, and put the total underneath. So 1 plus 1 equals 2, and subtract. What's 11 take away 2?
9.
9. This works for every number in the universe. It will always go back to 9. If you write down a number.
Even like a long number.
To infinity.
Let's do a three-digit number.
Let's do a two-digit number first. Everybody in the audience. Okay. Well, first, let's do 13. Everybody try 13. Just add it in your head. You go, okay, 1 plus 3 is 4. 13 take away 4, 9. Let's try a bigger number. Let's try 17. So 1 and 7 is 8. Yeah. 17 take away 8, 9. Let's try a bigger number. Let's try 22. So add the two digits together. 2 plus 2 will give you a 4. 22 take away 4 will give you 18. Look at that answer. Beautiful, Carrie. That's 1 and 8 adds up to 9. Everybody in the audience, write down your age. Just write down your two-digit age or picture it if you can. Now, add the two digits together and subtract that total from your age, and you should get a number that adds up to 9, right? So, Carrie, did you want to tell everybody?
Yeah, 38.
Add it up, you get?
Yeah.
11, 38. Take away 11, and we'll give you 27.
27.
Two and seven is nine. Mm-hmm. You want to try yours? Did it work?
54.
So it adds up to 9. 54 take away 9 is 45. 4 plus 5 is 9. Marcus, you're 68. Oh, what is it?
I was happy you said two-digit numbers.
Yeah.
53.
So 5 and 3 adds up to 8. 53 take away 8 gives you a 45, and that answer adds up to 9. Every number has this hidden pattern in it that goes down to 9, and what it's designed to do is teach the human brain arithmetic. So instead of flashcards and memorization drills, now when you're driving down the road and your kid sees the number 11, that number 11 was designed to teach every human being 1 plus 1. That's why you have to write a 1 and a 1 for 11. So, okay, you think 1 plus 1 is 2. So plug it in. What's 11? Take away 2. 9. It's a checker that you're right. 1 plus 1 is 2. Now, Carrie, try to make a mistake. Today, 1 plus 1 isn't 2. Mm-hmm. Let's say today 1 plus 1 is 3. Mm-hmm. So what's 11? Take away 3.
8.
It's not 9. So there's no way 1 and 1 is 3. Only the right answer will plug in to make it 9. So it's a way to train your brain for arithmetic. Every number you see is just a math fact waiting to happen. So, Carrie, when you're driving home tonight and you see a speed limit sign and it says 55 miles an hour on it, so write down 55 and let's see how it works out. Add it up.
10.
Take it away.
45.
4 9. And 5 is 9. You just exercise this calculator, this muscle in your brain by doing that little pattern. So
my
it's a way to.
Tired.
Yeah, it's a.
math isn't right.
Because we've never used that muscle, and so that's why. Yeah. And so it's just a new way to teach kids arithmetic. So that's what I'm working on.
And so where's this going to come out in.
The end of next month.
And it comes out in book form?
Yep, humancalculator.com.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So and can we maybe link that up to the website when it comes out?
I'd be honored, guys. That'd be great.
Okay.
Yeah,
it's
I'd be
deal.
Honored.
That's
I'm
a
trying to
deal.
I'm trying to reach every 9-year-old kid on the planet to teach them that everything goes down to 9 because they're all about the number 9.
Got to get it when you're 9.
Exactly. Right. That's my goal.
That's awesome. Okay. Now, let's move on to the economics here.
Yes.
What do you think, if you were taking this unique perspective that you have, and you're looking at our economic problems now.
Mm.
What comments would you have for the president or his folks?
I'm interested to see your response to these because these are things you just sit around and think about, and it's really frustrating for me. But as a human calculator, I always try to think things through from the point of zero, and so just like our national debt should be zero,
right?
How many children should be uninsured? Should be zero. How many kids you know, shouldn't make it through school or have school available to them. Zero. There's all these simple questions that America really needs to ask himself that we need to make sure the answer to this question is zero, and our programs fill those answers, no matter what. There's just certain things we can't afford not to do. How many homeless people should there be? There will always be some, but, you know, right now we can't even count how many. We should make it a goal to get it closer to zero. And we already have programs in place to do all these things. Another example is IRS. Delete the IRS and put in a couple of taxes that are very simple that I think would revolutionize the way that people in America feel about living in America. And delete the IRS income tax, the whole thing, because it's bigger than the Bible now. And if it's if a tax code is bigger than the Bible, something's up. There's something wrong.
And way scarier, by the way.
Way scarier, right. And nobody understands it. At least the Bible, there's some cool stuff in there. You get out of it, you might be able to be a better person. So with this tax code, it's out of control. So eliminate the tax code completely and put two taxes in place. A 10% flat tax on all income for American citizens. Flat tax, 10% off the top. And then a consumption tax of 10% of whatever money you spend in our society. And that, if you do the math, if you look at how much people made in America last year, and you take 10% of that, and you take how much America spent last year in the American economy and did the math on 10% of both of those, it would more than cover our national debt in 2 years if all we did was make that one switch. Just by that one decision, that one change. Now, I understand a lot of people are going to lose jobs. We're going to have a couple more million unemployed people because attorneys, accountants, all the people that are in the middle of this mix.
Wait a minute. Sorry,
are out of the equation.
Okay, we're out. You had me, then you lost me.
He was with you all.
That's why I'm excited. To get your reaction to this, because I know that it's going to.
No, I've been pushing flat tax for a long time, and consumption tax makes sense to me. The combination is an interesting idea, though, because consumption tax, you know, the worries are that it would have to be too high. And then you would create a big black market there because people wouldn't want to pay the tax if it was 18% or whatever number you want to come up with.
10%, simple math. Everything's 10%. And that's in a state, that's government. And now the other thing is that eliminate the whole IRS, okay? But now let's say any company in America that's making over $1 million, let's double it and make them pay 20% tax. Because right now these companies are paying 30 to 40% tax. They're making billions of dollars. But through the legal system, they end up paying less than what average American taxpayers pay. And so why don't we just do a flat tax, 20% off the top if you're making over $1 million? Same thing with entrepreneurs. If you're making over $1 million, please chip in 20%. 10% off the top of everything levels the playing field for all Americans. It really reinvigorates the idea of the American dream that we're all here and we can all be free to do and chase happiness any way we want. So I think that would eliminate a lot of our problems, but more importantly, get us going in the right direction. And then there's some other things that are really bothering me about zero in America. And since we're, if you don't mind, like ground zero, 9/11 happened. And remember 9/12 and now this whole program about 9/12, attitudes changed. We were all praying. Everybody was singing on CNN, you know, God be good and all these things. And 9/13, everybody was back to normal. So, you know, I don't know what happened there, but I really feel like America is a special place. And so now America dealt with 9/11. And now what we have sitting there is a big hole in the ground still. 7-8 years later, right? That's ground zero and zero. So I really want America to be known as ground zero. And to start with, every building in America should renumber their floors and have the ground floor be the zeroth floor, ground zero, in commemoration of 9/11, and to teach us that numbers start at zero. I have a subliminal, you know, campaign in this, but really it's just one way America can teach American students that everything starts at zero. The national debt should be zero. How many missing children should we have? Missing children boggles my mind. I visit schools every day all over the country and all over the world. And when I look at the statistics of how many missing children there are in Arizona and in America, and the number's over 1 million, and we're all just lackadaisical about, hey, there's only 1 million kids missing when I woke up this morning. It might be 1,000,010 tonight. What's the big deal? It's less than 1%. So these numbers are really desensitizing America, and I think zero would reinvigorate us to really make some goals, to change our attitude, to put us in the right direction.
Does any country, any culture, anywhere pay tribute to zero like this?
Well, there are hotels that are numbered zero, you know, like in Europe and Australia and other places. So they've done that in the Far East as well. But in America, like one time I saw you at a baseball game years ago, and I had this crazy idea, and I was so glad I got to see you at the game. But I went to the United States Post Office and asked them to get box zero. Because if you walk into a United States Post Office and you look at the wall of boxes, it starts at one and it goes to whatever they can fit. And so I said, I really need box zero.
They're like, take this guy out of here. Yeah, sure, Mr. Flansburgh.
Yeah, so they took my name and number, and, you know, that was that. And so
I've we'll call you.
Did you want me to sue
the United States government for box zero?
I was a little busy then. I couldn't get to that one.
And so
is that case still available?
I'd be honored, sir, if you would take it.
Let me think about that.
And so, but I'm trying to, I figured out all these ways to use zero as a way to educate kids. And, you know, like right now, the other thing is that 10% of economics is to decide. The other part is it should not be mandatory. I hate to say that because it sounds scary. But if we could all save 10%. So when you get your paycheck, you save 10% for yourself. Yeah. It would increase our savings. It would increase our economic. I mean, it really would do a lot more than anything else spending would do. So 10% into savings, 10% to charity, right? 10% to taxes. You take all that off the top. You still got more than half your money, and you've taken care of everybody around you, government, charities, your friends, your family, and you still got some bucks left. And
you know what? You don't need an accountant. If I took that case, I have a feeling how much money I would make on it.
Zero. I know exactly.
Hey, let me ask you this. Don't you think if everybody paid 10% that I love it. I'm ready to vote for you. Don't you think that if everybody had skin in the game, it would change a lot of attitudes? Because now when you start talking about taxes, so many people just feel like, well, you know.
Well, that was a big scam also in the, you know, frankly, that Obama was running there when he was saying he was giving, he's still doing it, saying he's giving a tax break to 95% of the people.
When
40% of those don't pay any taxes, so that's really called an increase in welfare payments.
Exactly.
But that sounds bad. So we say, well, we're actually cutting their taxes. Well, they don't pay any taxes. So.
And the whole reason we got into this was the whole stock market thing. Yeah. And, you know, the thing that scares me is I'm also a professional poker player. And
I would hate to run up against this guy.
He's on a lot of people's blacklist.
There's not enough for poker, though. But
how about blackjack?
But, yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Blackjack? Are you banned in some places?
I've done really well. I love blackjack.
But he doesn't count the cards.
No.
Isn't it amazing they can ask you to turn off your brain to sit down at our table to play with your money? I can't believe they can
get
away with
that.
But here we are. The stock market, they always said, oh, it's all regulated and things like that. I know guys that are doing better on internet poker every day than guys who play the stock market every day. And the risk assessment factor is not much different than what they're doing. And so to the fact that it's legitimized, the fact that it's legitimized and poker, online poker isn't, and we could tax online poker and pay off.
Well, we should do that.
Something huge. So it's very frustrating that...
we should do that.
I'd be fine.
Well, I've always believed that. I'm about the stock market. I'm sure you'll agree with this. I said this for years that, you know, if you go down to the Mesa Rotary Club and, we've got a potential new member here, and if the guy stands up and says, well, yes, I'm a stockbroker. I just moved to town. I'm working over at Merrill Lynch. Everybody, oh, that's great. What a great guy. I mean, he's going to be great for the community. And if the guy next to him says, I got a new member, Bob, what do you do? Oh, I'm a professional gambler. I gamble for a living, and that's what I do. Oh, my God, get him out of Mesa. And in reality, they're pretty much the same, except one guy admits
different
it.
Different commodity.
You know, because, frankly, the idea that by the time these tips get to Mesa, that's a real hot tip, I really don't think so. People, I think, have figured that out by now. I mean, one thing about this debacle is I think average people have figured out that there's a lot of an inside game going on here. Unfortunately, and it shouldn't be, but that's the way it is. That whole Martha Stewart thing, by the way, if you go back to that, that just showed, that was just a little glimpse into their world. You know, a little phone call here, a little, cocktail conversation here, and then next thing you know, someone either doesn't lose a lot of money where the rest of us would, or somebody makes a lot of money where the rest of us wouldn't because we wouldn't know about it. So, you're right. I mean, to me, sports gambling, sports betting on games and things, I would think you could learn just as much, if not more, about a potential game. Let's say, Arizona State and Temple. If you followed Arizona State all year and you know them backwards and forwards, you learn about Temple, you probably got a better guess on that one than you do about whether
you know, Citicorp stock's going to go up to 2 or drop down to 50 cents.
And there's more money spent on the research of those statistics in sports than there is on the internet and a lot of, on the investment side in a lot of times.
So. Now, we got to turn, let's turn to that. One of my many topics here. We got a few more to cover here. Now, we do have to give the Woody here. But since I mentioned that, I'm gonna go ahead and get everybody's picks here for the NCAA tournament. And here, what I need from you is, first, I need, will Arizona State win their first round game against Temple? And I'm going to say yes.
Yes.
Scott?
Oh, yes, they have to.
Someone bet on it. I can see already by that desperate tone in his voice.
Yes. God, I hope so.
Mark, I'm going to go. Spread. I'm going to make it a sweep.
Okay, a sweep for ASU, and then I assume Syracuse will win their game. So if it's Arizona State, Syracuse.
You know what their chances are?
What?
Zero. I'm back to zero.
You're going to Syracuse?
I was born and raised just outside of Syracuse, and the fact that I live next to ASU and I'm a Syracuse
you
boy.
Don't let emotion
that's
get
why
into
I,
it.
I'm really excited, but I picked Syracuse to go all the way to the Final Four.
If it goes six overtimes, I like Syracuse.
Yeah, yeah, they are good at that. So you're going to, Mark, you're going
to
pick Syracuse?
Yeah, I hate to say it, but.
Carrie?
I'm a devil, and I don't think they can beat Syracuse.
Yeah, I'm going to pick Syracuse, too. I hate to say it. I mean, we're all for Arizona State. Now, what about, but, you know, I think, I don't know. Arizona State's surprising to me because I've seen them play
surprised
a
me in the
lot.
Pac-10 tournament.
Well, I've seen at least half their games, and I hate to say it, but I'm really not that impressed with their team. I don't think they're that good, but maybe, I guess they are.
Go on.
Because they've, you know,
they just have the ability to, they should have won that USC game. I mean, they had that game.
Yeah, I don't know what they did there.
They just have the ability to choke it away.
And at the end, you know, they go to Harden, and
who didn't know that?
That's the thing. When everybody knows that's where you're going,
he didn't look comfortable.
No, he didn't. He wasn't a guy like if you know, give him a break. I mean, he's a kid. Although he looks like he's about 40.
I know.
There was a guy who
went back to school.
I think he did. There was a guy named Frank Wright who looked just like James Harden in the ninth grade at Carson Junior High. And I didn't look like that. I had glasses.
He had a beard.
I had nothing. I was counting my pubes. You know, like I think I've got 5. Frank has a full beard.
You look like his name from the show? Father Knows Best.
Yeah, No.
My Three Sons.
I look like Ernie Douglas.
He looked like Ernie Douglas from My Three Sons. And no shit, the picture
Ernie
does not lie. He was darling.
He was cute. But here I am going, oh, look under my arm. I think I see a couple of pubes. Here comes Frank. He's got a full beard. He's driving there.
He's on a Harley.
Dice on his window, on his rearview mirror.
And I may have told you this, but he was very intimidating to me. He's a very nice guy. But he was about a foot taller than me. He had all this, you know. I swear to God, the guy was 25. And so, you know, I would always say hi to him. And then we had typing class together. And in typing class, typing.
The most used skill from high school.
No, it was great. It was great. So, you know, but here's the thing. Frank is sitting next to me, and he called me professor. So he'd go, hey, professor. I'm like, oh, God. And I'd ignore him, and he'd go, hey, professor. I'd say, yeah. And he'd say, you got to help me with this, professor. You got to help me. I said, what? You got to help me with this typing.
You can't cheat in typing.
Because they'd say, like, awesome. Go, and what do you do?
Give me your paper, okay.
And honest to God, I remember, like it was yesterday, I'd say, Frank, I'd like to help. How come you're doing this to me, professor? I can't believe you're doing this to me. How come you won't help me, man?
He didn't even get that you couldn't cheat at typing.
No, he didn't even understand.
How dumb is Frank?
How would I do it? With my right hand on my typewriter, my left hand over there on yours. A, no one would see that. And B, you can't do that.
Right.
You can't type with one hand, not even looking at it over there. And Nick, he was going to beat me up or something. Wow. You're going to pay for this, professor.
He probably didn't.
Did he ever get you?
You didn't cheat anyway,
nice
did you?
Guy. He got over it. I think he might have figured out that it was an unreasonable request.
He might
anyway, he looked like James Harden, you know, in the ninth grade. I mean, come on, man. He would drive off, and I would get on my little Schwinn.
You didn't cheat in high school, did you? Or you didn't cheat growing up, did you?
Never.
Yeah.
No, actually, I did not.
I know. When you're smart, you don't have to cheat.
No.
I cheated.
I wanted to help Frank.
I cheated. Mark's like, I cheated.
Oh, yeah.
I'll tell you how I cheated.
One time after a test, I said, what'd you get for number 10? And my friend said, true. What'd you get? And I said, Sweden. One of us is going to get this wrong.
That's not a good sign.
Yeah.
Well, when I went to law school, they had... in my day, especially, well, they still do it. It's a Socratic method, but you know, the movie The Paper Chase had just come out, so some of these professors thought they were Kingsfield. You know, they were going to really play it up. And the founding dean taught torts, and he's a really good guy. His name's Willard Pedrick, but he was very. This was his deal. He was ruling the court. You know, the first year tort class, and the deal was at some point in time during the semester you would be called upon, and he'd do it very dramatically. Mr. Cordes, and then you'd have to stand up, and then he would grill you on the next case. So it behooved you to be prepared, have read the cases, so you would read, you know, way up. And as lame as my study habits were in law school, at that point in time, it was still, they weren't bad, because it was early, very early. And so Fred DeVal, who was, you know, big shot around town, right? And, you know, ended up being a big Babbitt guy and Clinton guy and really one of the great guys of all time. Well, Fred went to college with me, and we were rooming together in law school. So Fred's sitting next to me. And, man, we just flew through the cases. Well, and of course, I had done the minimum in my mind. Certainly, I wouldn't want to be very far ahead. And there's like 2 minutes left, 3 minutes left, and he decides to go to the next case, which I had not read. And I'm going, oh, shit. He goes, Mr. Woods. Oh, not good. Stand up. And this is the one time in the semester you're going to get called on. But, I'm standing there, and everybody's staring at me. And most of these people, you know, they'd read the whole book like five times, much less.
Law school nerds.
All super nerds, believe me. He says, in the case of, you know, B&O Railroad versus Jackson, did the plaintiff rely upon strict liability in making its claim against the railroad? Well, it's yes or no. I said, well, that's good. I got a shot here, you know?
50-50.
And I kind of hold off, and Fred, who was sitting next to me, goes, yes, yes, yes. So I go, very confidently, yes. Immediately, 50 hands shoot up.
Thanks,
pretty good
Fred.
Sign. It's no.
Shit.
Yeah, it was no. The
did he throw
no.
you under the bus, or was he saying yes, you had gotten
no,
called
he
on?
Was saying yes, and I said afterwards, what the hell? Well, why did you say yes? He goes, I thought it was probably us. You were guessing? I can guess. I can guess on my own. Don't
Thanks,
guess
Fred.
For me. Damn. Oh, that was it. So then I didn't go anymore. So it was over.
That's great.
Anyway, okay, now we got to get so everyone's picking Arizona State, yes, and then lose to Syracuse, unfortunately. What about Arizona?
God, I can't even believe this.
Arizona
freaking
plays Utah.
Made. This is such crap that they've been in there. I cannot believe.
Surprising,
finally,
isn't it?
Finally, I was like, we're going to see a tournament without those damn Wildcats.
Yep.
Arizona.
And they got a good
Why
ranking.
Not? It wouldn't be a tournament,
you know,
if they don't invite
Arizona,
those jackasses from
Arizona's
Tucson.
Arizona's a weird team.
Yeah, whatever.
They could surprise. And they're playing Utah. It's got a tremendous record, but, you know, you never know.
Did you see Vitale went off on them getting in? And then he had them picked for the Sweet 16.
Well,
I can't
amazing.
Believe they're in.
Arizona.
And then he says, in the Sweet 16,
Is
Arizona.
Is anyone picking Arizona to beat Utah?
Yes.
No. Yeah.
Yes, you are.
Yeah.
No, Scott.
Much bad, as I hate
bad
to
karma.
Even
yeah, I'm
going to
say no.
They shouldn't even
no
be in there.
Okay, we need to know who you're going to pick to win it all. We need that pick right now. We can revise this later, but this is Scott's time here. So
this is your moment.
This is
your
moment.
One
you tell
shining
who's
going
to win it all. You filled out your brackets. Who's going to win it all?
Go Orange.
Oh, wow. That's a hometown pick.
It is. You know,
that's
but
so
it's
weak.
A six overtime thriller. I mean, I think
over
the momentum,
who, Georgetown?
Well, no, last week. No, they when
who did
they
who did they go to overtime with?
Wasn't it it was somebody in the East.
Was it somebody
tournament.
Good?
It was
really Connecticut.
Good. Connecticut.
Oh,
they're
UConn.
Really
Calhoun.
Good. And so I you know, yeah, a sentimental
okay, well,
pick.
All right. That's
you know, you had me on the flat tax and
yeah,
everything.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
I didn't even sound convincing, did I?
Mark, who are you picking?
God, I hate him. I'm going to go North Carolina.
Okay.
I don't like Roy Williams.
I was going to go Barack, too. Barack and I are picking UNC.
Oh, did he pick UNC?
Yeah, he did.
Well, then I didn't know that. I have to change my mind.
Oh, my God. Partisan.
Come on, get behind the president.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to pick Pitt.
They say they're the best.
You know what? I'm going to go. This is makes as much sense as your pick. I'm going to go with my alma mater. They're terrible. But
Ball
they're
State?
In.
Who's
Missouri.
Missouri. Missouri.
Their offense looks like they play great defense on offense.
What's
they're
their
bumping
nickname?
Into each other. It looks
really?
Like the Keystone Cops.
What's their nickname? Missouri what?
The Tigers.
Oh,
dude.
The Tigers?
Dude.
I'm good with numbers.
Dude,
Mark.
Come on.
Just good with numbers.
I was going to go with Occidental, but they didn't.
Gonzaga.
They didn't
I can't believe they're out.
Well, you know.
It's rigged.
Know,
it's
sports
rigged.
Sports is, the first, I got to Oxy, and Fred, Chris Hamill from here, Bob Robb, we all go down there, and we say, okay, we're going to, you know, I didn't know much about their sports, because they don't have athletic scholarships, which kind of hurts your sports
teams,
you know. Yeah. And so, but here's the first football game. Like, we're going to go down to the first home game. So we go down, and, you know, there's a big crowd there, and there's these signs up, kill the poets. Like, what? Yeah, we were playing the Whittier Poets.
Oh, God.
Yes, I cannot
did
get it.
Did you play the girls' schools, too?
No. The Whittier Poets. We played Caltech.
Playing Oberlin. No. Women.
Pomona, things like that.
What's the Occidental mascot?
Tiger, Bengal Tiger.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
sounds pretty aggressive.
Kill
for
the
a bunch
poet,
of
Rhodes Scholar.
Yeah, I know. Come on. But no, they did play Caltech, and their basketball team was very funny. Glasses, big thick glasses, stuff like that. The one
like
team I think I
could Sherman and Peabody.
Yeah, that's right.
Speaking of old pictures of Grant, by the way, you need to go on the website and see the old Wallace and Ladbo pictures of.
Oh, for
go
God
to GrantWoods.com and see that.
We need one of you as Ernie Douglas.
It's awesome.
If you put one up of you as Ernie Douglas, I will put one up as me of Dennis the Menace, which is what I looked like until about the sixth grade.
Really?
Yes.
Will you?
Ugly.
What happened in the sixth grade?
Oh, that's funny. You know what? You were talking about
Did you bloom? Did you blossom?
I was allowed to grow my hair.
Oh, okay. Was that
it? Yeah, that was it. Yeah, that was it. Trust me, that was it. There was nothing else. The Larry the Cable Guy roast, Marsha Brady was there. And she's not, I don't know that she's really funny inherently, but somebody obviously wrote her a great bit.
Was she the one who's lost a bunch of weight or she's done something or kicked alcohol?
She's in recovery. She jokes a lot about being in recovery, but I guess Larry the Cable Guy goes up and they must have a really special friendship because he says, wow, it's just really great because, you know, I mean, I had such a crush on you growing up and I mean, I used to masturbate to you and now you're here with me. And he goes, seriously, what happened? And she kind of looks at him like, that's not really funny. And he goes, yeah, no, seriously, what the hell happened? Four times, gives her what the hell. Well, you know.
She's old now.
She's
not that old, though, is she?
She's looks a little older than maybe she is.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, so she was an alkie, is that the problem?
I don't know what.
Did you watch Brady Bunch? See, that was probably
Absolutely.
That was your era.
Trivia question, what was the name of the dog in the Brady Bunch?
Tiger.
Alice.
Sorry. That's terrible. You know Alice was out. She
ran right in.
So close.
And you know Tiger was the dog.
I thought you had it.
I knew that.
Who was allergic to Tiger's flea bite?
Okay, speaking of television, we have to discuss here before we go. And then we'll get to the Woody, okay. But we have to discuss that the other big news of the last week was that we finally had a real interview where someone actually was a journalist. Someone actually had done their preparation in advance and didn't just ask questions off a piece of paper and then go to the next question, but had them set up, followed, had the evidence there. And it wasn't any of the news people. It was Jon Stewart on Comedy Central, The Daily Show, with Jim Cramer. Now, did everybody see that? We put it up on the site. Now, you didn't see it, and it's on the site.
I'm sorry.
I watched.
I'll get right to you. Wait, I'll be right back.
I watched it. I loved it. I thought it was
isn't it great?
Fascinating, entertaining, educational, and riveting.
And
riveting.
And kind of hard to watch.
It was
because
an annihilation.
You were squirming. And believe me, I think Kramer's a sleazebag, but it was still like, ugh, kind of that empathy for...
Well, it was
why is he there, is what I was thinking.
It was, well, good question.
What an idiot.
Someone thought, okay, well, obviously he was, you know, Stewart had been creaming him, and, you know, if those of you who didn't follow it, I guess, you know, Stewart started on The Daily Show knocking this Rick, whatever his name is.
Santelli
on CNBC, mm-hmm. because CNBC, who are they to say anything when they touted all these stocks and touted the market and buy, and never said a word about this little thing over here on the side that's going on with these derivatives that they knew all about, which mm-hmm. all those people there knew. They don't even bring that up. They're just, no, go ahead. You know, invest for the long term, no problem. And then they really shouldn't be saying a word right now. This was his point. And so he kind of nailed him. And then Cramer, with the biggest mistake of his life,
defends his colleague and says, well, I think that was kind of a cheap shot. Oh, really? Okay. So the next night, they pull out him touting Bear Stearns and telling people, Bear Stearns is solid. I mean, there he is. They just run the clip. Bear Stearns is solid. This company is not in trouble. Blah, 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 blah. Just absolutely annihilates him. Then he keeps responding. And he goes out and says, well, okay, but that's what, you know, they took that out of context. I never said to buy Bear Stearns.
Okay.
I didn't say that. So the next night, here he goes again, and John Stewart says, well, you know, okay. Obviously, that was the implication of what he was saying. It's a solid company. It's not going anywhere. It's been great for a long time, for, you know, decades after decades. But technically, you're right. You didn't say right there that you should buy. You did that 10 days earlier. Here's that clip, and he actually says, buy Bear Stearns. I'm telling you right now, buy Bear Stearns. Well, nice. All those people got wiped out. So then, I guess, he had the great idea to restore his image. He'll go on, like Bill Clinton going on The Tonight Show. And, you know, people have done this over the years. Just go on. And
Hugh Grant,
yes. And it works.
He took it like a man.
Yeah.
Hugh did great.
He did.
Oh, you're talking about on the...
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. No, I don't know anything about...
Was that a dude?
Backseat.
Wow.
The woman he was with, Hugh Grant. It was something.
I thought it was transvestite.
Oh, really?
Prostitute.
That's been a while. Adichie. They're all running together.
Oh, that's sick. So anyway, he thought he would go on there and restore his image, do the mea culpa, and he just got...
Hammered.
It was fantastic. And check it out on the site. I think we still got it out
John's
there.
A smart man.
He's very smart. He's fantastic. It's great stuff. But the question, it begs the question of, you know, where's anybody else on this? Why aren't our so-called serious journalists? They've got lots of time on their hands to do these shows every night, and the nightly news people didn't do anything. The blowhards on Fox or MSNBC, they don't do anything.
This isn't
I'll
like
tell
19...
you the difference. Hmm. Stewart's, all Stewart wants out of it is laughs.
Yeah.
He has no agenda.
Right.
These other people all have agendas.
Yeah.
So when it's all about honesty and just going, and you know what, comedy is both sides of the aisle.
Right.
So and you know what I think both sides love is to expose hypocrisy.
Exactly, and that's what he does. But he done his homework. It really looked like it reminded me of a court case. You know, if I'm cross examining somebody on the stand, that is exactly how you do it. And by the way, in court now you can, I've done it many times here over the last few years. You can go directly to clips, so you videotape the deposition, and then you ask the guy a question. Oh, really? Well, let's look at, boom, just like you said, bring up 210, boom.
It's way better than reading.
What about that? Oh, yeah, up until recently.
Worth 1,000 words.
Yeah, until recently you had to actually, you just read it or
quoted,
whatever.
Do you want to retract anything you might have said? And you're, no, okay.
Yeah, I just had a trial.
Well used.
I had a trial and I'll give you another way that helps is, every time I've done it, if trials generally drag on for quite a while, so let's say the trial's 3 weeks, 4 weeks, something like that, and they've seen this damaging stuff. Well, if you can pull it up in your closing argument, it reminds them again. Oh, yeah, that guy was a jerk. Yeah, because there he is being a jerk, you know. Mm-hmm. It's fantastic. So that's exactly what he did to it. And after a while, you're right, it was like wave the white flag.
Yeah, dude, just crawl under the desk and beeline towards...
He kept saying, oh, I'll try to do better. And
yeah,
but that's
sorry.
Too late.
Horrible. Yeah,
it's too late for the people that lost money. That's
yeah, because he said, hey, you know what? It is too late. How about my mom, who's 75 years old, who you and people like you said, put all your money in long-term stocks and you're going to be okay. Wow. And you knew that wasn't true. You knew these people were putting everything at risk here. And now she's lost half her money. So
why.
What do you got to say for yourself?
That's like last week when Obama said, I try not to look at the daily fluctuations of the stock market. You know, it's not that big a deal. It's like, it is a big deal if you've just lost all your money and you thought you were retiring next week. And
yeah,
now you're
going to
be a Walmart greeter.
Right, because you got a plan. And that's happened to half the people in the country here. Most of the people in the country, because they've got it in stocks.
Yeah.
This great idea that we've had that stocks are safe and that's the way to go. Which, again, goes back to what Scott said earlier. I don't know. If you would have said, we're going to put it into a pool of gamblers, people would go, oh, my God, that's the craziest thing I ever heard of. Now, speaking of crazy, one thing I would like for people to remember is that the great Republican mantra and the George Bush mantra and all the candidates that pretty much followed him like lemmings on Social Security was what for the last decade? We should allow people to take a large portion of their Social Security and invest it privately in the stock market. Now, that was a hell of an idea. Now, the reason those of us who opposed that opposed it was not because we're for government doing these things. It was because it's supposed to be a safety net. And if you eliminate that safety net, if these people blow it, however they blow it, then you're back to square one. You've still got to take care of them. You got to do something. We're not going to let people starve. We're not going to let old people, you know, walk the streets homeless. So, no. This is the old idea, you know, when Gore said we're going to put it in the lockbox. Well, that's because we don't want the government or people themselves screwing with it. Mm-hmm. And the Republicans' argument was, well, you know, people have a right to do that on their own, and I don't think so. That's not the concept.
Back to square zero is what you meant.
Back to square zero. I'm sorry. You're right. Hey, can we, since I'm picking on Republicans, can we haven't, we're going to go talk to our sponsors. I think this we have to talk to Marley's about. It costs $4.95 to download a drum roll. And so we've gone to Hensley quite a bit and our other sponsors, but I think maybe we can go talk to Dan, see if we can get $4.95 so we have a drum roll. But we don't have a drum roll. So can you guys help me out here? Okay, exciting. Take a break. Seth needs a break. We'll go right back to drum rolling.
Break.
You out of film?
No, I'm not out of film. I just totally...
All right, drum roll, please. This week's Woody goes to former Vice President Dick Cheney. Boy, it ended quickly.
Sometimes right it up. Happens
I'm
like
exhausted.
That.
Seriously, yes. Okay. Yeah, no 4 hours on that one. 4 seconds. Okay, when I left the AG's office, I decided to take a cue from former President George H.W. Bush and refrain from any negative comments about the job my successor was doing. I figured she had enough to handle without dealing with Monday morning quarterbacking from me. Besides, I knew enough to realize that decisions are often different when you have all the facts on the inside as opposed to just how things appear. I'm happy to see that the second President Bush has just vowed to observe the same policy. But somebody didn't get the memo. No surprise. Dick Cheney showed little respect for protocol or the spirit of the law or the Constitution during those long, long 8 years when he was vice president. So why should he start now? He went on CNN Sunday and blasted President Obama on pretty much all fronts. Worse, he said that Obama had put the nation at greater risk of terrorist attack by stopping the torture of our enemies. He lamented the passing of waterboarding. He claimed that the Bush administration had little responsibility for the current economic crisis and criticized Obama for how he was handling it. He said he loved Rush Limbaugh and would pay to see Obama debate Limbaugh on the radio. This guy is seriously scary and deluded. It's great that he wants the President of the United States to debate a radio entertainer when as vice president, he was more reclusive than Howard Hughes at a flea market. Cheney is like Mr. Potter from It's a Wonderful Life if Mr. Potter was having a bad day. Morose, blind to history, imperious, cynical, imperialist, just what we need to restore confidence in the country again. Dear aptly named Dick, please go away. You played a major role in screwing up this country like it's never been screwed before, so thanks but no thanks for the advice. We would have to be absolutely crazy to listen to a word you say. You blew it, you know it, and we know it, and if you really don't get it, then you're even scarier than you seem. After 8 years of screwing the country royally, Dick Cheney gets a Woody. There we go. Guess who? Very nicely done. That's the way we do it. Okay. All right. Any parting thoughts you guys want to throw out
there? I hope he doesn't see this. He'll take a shot at it.
That was his greatest move, though. Yeah, that he shot a lawyer. He lied about that, too, by the way. I mean, you know, remember they tried to cover it up for a while and kind of halfway blamed the guy, like the guy was in the wrong place and all that.
Yeah, you got in the
bullshit.
Way of the bullet. Right?
Yeah, he did. He did one of those that you don't do in hunting where he turned with the bird and there's a guy over there. Oh, I'll take a shot anyway. Boom. Nice work. I mean, clown. What can I say?
Hey, you know, I do have a question for our guest. Have we already missed World Math Day?
March 4th. That's I'm the ambassador for World Math Day. It's a global event to inspire kids to just be aware that math is fun. And we had almost 2 million students online in a 48-hour period that solved almost half a billion math problems, a new world record.
Wow.
I was excited because I read the other day. I thought I read that kids were using a lot more math. It turns out it was meth.
So I was, typo.
Yeah. I was not nearly
we
as...
We need to change that.
Yes.
And in our administration, we will change it. That's for sure. Okay, World Math Day. Circle that. Make sure you get the missus a little something there for
March
World 4th?
Math
Day.
Yeah, what day of the week was that?
Wednesday.
Nine
letters.
Wow. All right, Scott Flansburgh, we're going to be checking you out. We'll link up on the website when you come out with your stuff here so we can help you. Spread
Thanks.
The word here. And maybe
math, not
maybe start
math.
It in Arizona. Math, not meth.
Thanks for having me on the show. It's always an honor to hang out with you, and I miss you. Never get to see you at the D-backs much.
We'll do something.
But it was always a pleasure. We got to watch a lot of D-backs together when it was very special.
Yes.
D-backs time. It was an amazing run we had. So I miss you.
What about Mark?
Nine
I'll see you.
I anything about
Mark.
Him.
Hey, just so you know, Mark was my witness to the best round of golf I've ever had in my life.
Oh, you're the big golfer. That's right.
And Mark, go ahead. Just tell him. Just so there's proof.
I'd like to take a little credit for this.
You were in my cart. You were 50%.
You were in my cart.
I'm a very mellow playing partner. I talked him through a lot of shots.
Yes.
It was
What'd
all
you
casual. It shot a 64 at the Boulders.
At what? Rolling Hills?
At the Boulders.
Oh.
At Rolling Hills.
Boulders South, and I missed a putt on 18 for a 29.
Choked on it.
For the back nine to have a 29
on the back
nine.
That's classic anyone in sports.
No, it was a 40-footer lipped out.
Shoots a 64 and he has to mention the one he missed.
Yeah, the one.
Right. Well, we played all the way back.
From the tips?
Yeah.
A 64?
We were playing with the assistant head pro at the time.
That is sick.
Dang.
Okay, remind me not
love
to play
golf.
With you.
I've got a whole new respect for you.
Oh, wow.
I love
that's
golf.
That's not good. Okay, well.
What's a perfect round of golf for you? What's it start at?
What do you mean?
Zero.
It has to be zero. Yeah. Everything's zero.
He had zero putts on that round.
That's, yeah.
That's how good he was.
Zero putts is the best kind.
All right, guys. Hey, short week, so we'll be up early next week. We'll see you then.